The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin in the hizzy on this Wednesday. How you doing, Kelly? Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fabulously. I believe that's a word.
Yeah, sure.
We got a lot on this show. My goodness, so much to get to. Baseball with Jason Weingarten. I got about five baseball topics I want to talk to him about. The debut of Ellie De La Cruz yesterday. God Ooh. Of the Cross is the English translation of that.
I never thought about that before, but so yeah.
I'll point that out.
He had an okay game.
So I have NL Rookie of the Year bets on him at 30-1. I do want to talk about Luis Arraez because after saying, I don't know if I want to make this bet yesterday, guess what I did? I made a FOMO bet. So the De La Cruz one I expect to win, the Arraez one I don't, but I got them both. We'll talk about Luis Arraez, who is hitting over 400 now. For those of a certain age, that's a big deal. We'll talk about that. And more, DeGrom, Jacob DeGrom with the Tommy John as well. Pritch will be here. Mike Pritchard talk NFL. Nick Whalen on the NBA. Matt Brown on golf. Will Hill with all his bets, baseball and basketball. Sia Nejad to talk golf with us, Canadian Open. And legal ramifications, or legal thoughts anyway, LIV-PGA merger, which we were on air for yesterday, Kelly. And I think our quick reaction was the correct one. My two-pronged reaction was, imagine being these PGA players. And the second one was, on the other hand, LIV, not only did the golfers win, but they really did make impact on the PGA Tour. They got more money for all the PGA golfers as well in all the process and forcing them to give bigger purses and change their event system. So we'll get into all that. I do want to start real quick before we get to the NBA Finals, game number three tonight between the Nuggets and the Heat. I do have two tennis plays this morning, one of which is about to start. I don't know that it has yet. It's the over in games in the Tomas Martin Echeverry Sasha Zverev match. These are all on VSiN.com/picks. If you're a subscriber, you have these on the VSiN picks page. This was up yesterday evening. I got Echeverry Zverev over 36.5 if you want to quickly jump in on that. And then a little later on, I have Casper Ruud over Holger Vitus Nadskov Rune, if you really want to know his full name. So Ruud over Rune at about -131. Those are the two remaining tennis plays. We do have the other men's semi set up tomorrow, the one that everybody's been expecting and waiting for, Djokovic-Alcaraz. Alcaraz now north of a $2 favorite. And I have Alcaraz futures in this tournament. But, man, I didn't think he'd be north of $2, to be quite frank with you, against Djokovic. But, he's the guy that's the guy to beat, for sure, I believe.
I'm diving in on tennis, Gil.
There you go.
Tailing you today on Ruud.
There you go.
And then I'm taking Djokovic, are you kidding me? I can get him close to 2-1? Yeah, sorry.
Stop it. Well, now you're going against me.
Beat
on that
me,
one.
Kid. It's okay.
And then the ladies' semis are set up with Iga Swiatek. Iga Swiatek taking on Beatriz Haddad-Maia tomorrow, and Aryna Sabalenka taking on Karolina Mukova. And the significance of that is if you listened to the Beating the Book French Open podcast preview prior to this tournament, that's what a preview is, I hope you bet Beatriz Haddad-Maia to win her quarter at 8-1. I gave that out. And I hope you bet Drew's Karolina Mukova to win her quarter. Can't remember what his number was, but both of those were given out on the Beating the Book podcast French Open preview. So congratulations to all who tailed on those, Haddad-Maia and Mukova, to win their quarter. So those are the two tennis picks of the day, which brings us to the NBA Finals Game 3. Kelly's smiling, by the way, because our colleague and senior NBA analyst.
You're such a pro. I'm sorry, man. I'm screwing you up back
there. No, that's all right. I just want to tell people why you're smiling. So Jonathan Von Tobel just walked in the studio, our senior NBA analyst, host of Hardwood Handicappers, our fine basketball podcast, which he co-hosts with Kelly. And he brought in, I guess, his son.
At least one of them. I didn't even notice him until he walked out. I was like,
kid.
Oh, yeah, we got a kid in the studio.
It was like him and his duckling. It was awesome.
It was.
Just trailing him.
And then he had to grab a jacket, like frantically running somewhere. JVT, Godspeed. I hope you get wherever you're going safely.
I would have liked to have a conversation with the little kid.
Right?
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, that's too bad. I wish he came on commercial. All right, so NBA Finals Game 3. We should have had JVT just come on set and talk
so
about it.
I was like, where are you running away to, man?
So if you missed it the other day, the bet that I do have in the game tonight between the Nuggets and the Heat is the under. I got it at 215.5. It's now 214.5. I would not let it get too much lower than that, quite frankly.
It kind of stabilized there.
Yeah.
When you talked about it the other day, we dropped down to 214.5. Really hasn't moved since.
A little bit of resistance to that number.
Yep.
And again, the thinking being that in both games, one and two, but particularly game two, the possessions, the total number of possessions is about 90 or 91, depending on who you believe in their count. And that thing just barely got over with that few of possessions. So for me, if the Heat don't hit an insane amount of threes, which is always a possibility, by the way, but I'm going to bet against that human achievement, and I'm going to take the under in this game. Tonight, game three, the series knotted up at one game apiece, best of seven NBA finals. We go to Miami tonight, where the Nuggets are 2.5-point favorites. And now, as I said, the total is 214.5.
I'll be looking live tonight, side and total. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think if it gets to a point where, you know, Miami comes out shooting hot from three, something like that, I'll be willing to jump in live on Denver. No real interest playing it pregame, though. So, and I agree with you on the under. I'm not going there pregame, but same situation. If I get a lot of scoring, a lot of made field goals early in this game, I can jump in on a live under. I do think that is the right side of the total here tonight. And the only thing I might end up on pregame, and people might roll their eyes out there, Michael Porter Jr. double-double.
Oh, the eye rolling is happening.
Yeah, might go back to it. I'm seeing it like 4-1 now. That number's getting a little out of control.
The eye rolling is happening. Can I interest you in the vein of Prop Joe on The Wire, can I interest you in a little proposition?
What you got?
Got some props in this game. Head-to-heads. How about that at DraftKings?
Yeah, this market's awesome.
By the way, when did they start putting up head-to-heads? In the conference finals or before that?
I think it was like conference finals. Yeah, okay. I think conference finals. And there are way more options than what you're seeing on your screen. I just grabbed the ones that were most intriguing to me because that's what I do. I'm a selfish producer.
That's okay. We like it when you're selfish, man. There's one of these that just leaps off the page.
Yeah.
We'll get to it.
Yeah. You texted me the same one that I was thinking of.
Yeah. So here's the first one. It's not the first one, but Jimmy Butler -0.5 against Jamal Murray. And 51.5 is what? The total of both of them.
Points, which I find even more interesting.
Interesting. I didn't even notice that when you sent that. Okay.
I would be, that's a heavy lean to the over for me, but with those two.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of like that over. I wasn't even looking at the totals, but I do like that over. 51.5 combined points, Jimmy Buckets and Jamal Murray. Any play on that spread, Butler -0.5 against Jamal?
Nah. That would be, if anything, I would go Jamal Murray, but I'm not. I wouldn't play that. I think the total over. I think you should expect to see bigger games from both those guys tonight.
I agree with you wholeheartedly that the play there is the over 51.5. These, again, available at DraftKings. I wish we could bet here at DraftKings, but we cannot. We couldn't bet at DraftKings wherever we were. I don't have a play on either the spread or the total here. Nikola Jokic -9.5 against Bam, and the total's 48.5. I don't want any part of either of those.
Yeah, me either. This one would be slight lean under and slight lean to Jokic, I guess, but yeah, nothing.
Okay, Nikola Jokic -3.5 against Jimmy Butler, total 55.5. I don't know if I want that either.
I don't like that total's that much higher than the one with Butler and Jamal Murray.
Here's the one that I love.
Yes.
Gabe Vincent.
Miami Heat legend.
Miami Heat great.
Is
Gabe
only
Vincent.
Late.
-0.5 against Aaron Gordon. Gimme Gabe Vincent on that, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you there.
Now again, I were calling to mind that Aaron Gordon in game number one in the early going was exploiting matchup advantages, you know, where he was getting posted up by much smaller guys than he, and obviously the Nuggets took advantage of that. But Eric Spoelstra certainly knows that. And certainly has adjusted for that. And so I think Gabe Vincent, just volume of threes alone, even if you thought Aaron Gordon was going to get some, which I don't know that he is, but even if you did, I'll take Gabe Vincent hoisting threes -0.5 over Aaron Gordon. The total, I don't know that I would touch the total here at 27.5, but I definitely want Vincent.
I was going to point out, I'm more interested in the Vincent side too, but like if we're like considering the total, it's flown over between these two in the first two games. Because Aaron Gordon had that huge first game when they had Caleb Martin in the starting lineup. Kevin Love goes in the starting lineup last game. He still has 12, but Gabe Vincent has 23, so you're sailing over this total in both the games.
Yeah. And then this last one is Jimmy Butler. And again, these are the five that Kelly thought were noteworthy. Selfish producer. minus 10.5 against your guy, Michael Porter Jr.
Porter, pass.
Hey, anytime you want to show up for this series, Michael, you're welcome. Jimmy Butler, minus 10.5 against Michael Porter Jr. The total's 40.5. I will pass.
I think Michael Porter's been talking a little trash, too, right? Him and KCP didn't show up for their postgame pressers. Step up, guys. Time to step up. KCP responsible for about 88% of the Miami Heat free throws in game two.
The big news, I don't know if I can call it big news, but the news in this tournament, and I think I'm going to get this right, Kelly. I have been saying day in and day out on this show that I do not believe Tyler Hero should be playing in this series at all. Like, I don't believe that Eric Spoelstra should try to incorporate him into this series. Well, it is now out that he will not. Tyler Hero will not play in game number three. This was the target. At one point, it was game three. Then they sort of adjusted it. Oh, maybe he could play in game two. Then it was back to game three. Well, he's out. He's out. And the stated reason, of course, is still the hand injury. The cynic in me, though, goes to my thinking, which is, I don't think you want him messing with the alchemy right now. Yeah. I just don't. And I don't think he's playing in this series, Kelly. Okay. I don't.
Yeah, I don't. I would lean that way, too. I don't think he probably is either. And you have no idea how much of this is smokescreen,
yep.
Right? Like, Spoke might as well come out and say that Alonzo Mourning's warming up as well. Like, you know.
Ronnie Cycli's available for tonight's game, everybody. That could be an interesting insert. No, I really believe that, because the way I asked it to you the other day was, well, imagine if it was just game seven left. You wouldn't want Hero to play. There's only 3 to 5 games left. At some point, it does become ridiculous. And I think we've reached that point. Heat, 2.5-point dogs. What else is new? Game number three. Can they do the impossible as an 8th seed? Tonight's game will go a long way towards that. I got the under. Sia Nejad on the Canadian Open and Liv and the PGA merging next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Won't take you but a few seconds. Then stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. It's that easy. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Real quick, by the way, Iga beating Coco this morning. Kelly, 6-4, 6-2. Straight sets. Pretty quick work. But the most difficult match of the tournament, 6-4, 6-2, so far for her at 6-4, 6-2.
Looking pretty good for Iga.
And by the way, real last thing on this, because I know there's people that are new to the show, they're like, boy, he talks a lot about, a favorite on the men's side and the women's side, Iga and Carlos, Iga Swiatek and Carlos Alcaraz, the world number ones. You have to understand, if you're new to this show, we probably spoke on this show, I did, about both of those players at least a year or two in some cases before any mainstream media, let alone other gambling shows or podcasts were talking about them, and we were making bets on them. So these feel like, of all the legacies of this show, that might be at the top of the list. And I will unabashedly make no apologies for betting not only Iga when she was 30-1 or 7-1 or 6-1 all the way down, now that she's barely in plus money. As I've said, she is going to be the greatest player of all time, in my opinion. She's going to win double-digit majors. We'll see. But I have been on her every single tournament she's ever won. Carlito, same thing. And if I hadn't had that history with him, I probably wouldn't talk about him as much. But that's our history with those two, and that's why. If you're new to the show and you're like, what's talking a lot about these favorites?
She's like your Keegan. She's like your Keegan Bradley, but she wins a lot more.
That's right.
Like
slightly,
a lot more.
Slightly more wins. Keegan Bradley. Who was your Keegan Bradley before your Keegan Bradley? Oh, Gary Woodland. Was your
I mean, no, well, hold on.
Yeah.
Keegan's the OG, okay?
He's the
Come
OG.
On.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, he's the OG.
All right, let's bring in someone who is not only a golf bettor, but also by trade an attorney. Sia Nejad, kind enough to join us once again. He's a PGA and NFL analyst for Sportsline, co-host of the First Cut podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D. That's how he spells his name, and he's wearing his traditional victory yellow today. How you doing, Sia?
I'm good. I'm assuming I'm here to talk about the RBC Canadian Open and only the RBC Canadian Open.
That's it. I just want bets on the Canadian Open. I want to talk about anything else. No, for real. So yesterday Kelly and I were on air when all this went down, and it was announced that the merger was happening. And apparently we found out moments after all the PGA Tour players found out. And so my two big reactions yesterday on the show were, as I said earlier, which is imagine being these PGA Tour players and how bitter they must be that the guys who took the money made out like gangbusters and they're coming back. So they got their cake and they're eating it too. And then the other part was, I also mentioned, I go, but in the end, just from beyond that, LIV really did impact the PGA Tour. They proved a point. They weren't paying these golfers enough on the PGA Tour. They could do some tweaks. They could stand to do some tweaks to their whole structure. From a legal standpoint, what is it between the lines that I'm probably not getting? Like, why do you think the PGA did this?
Well, a couple things. I want to go back to what you said about making the PGA Tour better, because the reason we have antitrust laws is for this very reason, so that you can have a competitor that's going to allow the consumer and the players themselves to actually sort of better the sport, better themselves, get paid more, and what have you. It's to protect the players and the consumer. And I think you're right. When it comes to allowing that competition, now we have a PGA Tour that's probably going to be bigger and better. But in terms of what led to this, so last year, I made a statement that I think a lot of people thought was kind of ridiculous because of all the vitriol between the two parties, that this case would ultimately settle. And the reason I thought that, and I don't think this is the exclusive reason they settled, by the way, but one of the main reasons I think they settled is because long protracted litigation is not something that either of these parties wanted. The discovery process was going to be brutal. It was going to reveal a lot of things that wouldn't have only implicated the cases at hand, but also maybe some antitrust stuff and things of that nature. It just would have been a bad look. It would have, even though it's in federal court, which can go faster, it would have had, there would have been appeals, there would have been delays, it would have been hard to wrangle all the parties for depositions and objections to discovery and all those things. This thing would have lasted a long time. And being that neither party would have known the actual outcome, so you don't really have the guarantee of, hey, we're going to win, we just have to go through this protracted legal battle and pay millions and millions of dollars in legal fees. You take all of that with all of the other associated stuff. I think the litigation end of this had a very big part to do with the settlement in terms of why the settlement happened now. It's going to happen now as opposed to in the middle of the discovery phase, for example.
I think you're right. And probably that, you know, the calculus was, oh, they can pay these legal fees, meaning the LIV side, forever and ever and ever. This will never end. So, yeah.
$600 billion.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm told, you know, $600 billion here, $600 billion there. All of a sudden, you got some real money at that point. All right. Well, I mean, is there anything else about this that you noted where you're just like, you're just mind blown by the whole thing? Obviously, Jay Monahan's about face. Did you see Rory's? And then we'll get to your bets on the Canadian Open here momentarily. But I just wanted to get to Rory. It almost feels like he is defending Monahan at this point. Rory, of all the guys, was the most vocal about, you know, anti-LIV and defending the PGA Tour and defending those that decided to stay and defending the integrity of the history of golf and what it meant to stay on the PGA Tour. And yet he's getting shouted down by other golfers, right, in meetings with Monahan. Did that surprise you?
Not at all. Because unfortunately, the way we look at things like as if they're static, as if they're not evolving, as if they're not moving. Back when Monahan was making some of the comments that he made and was really standing firm, I think he actually believed that the PGA Tour had plenty of viability long-term with their new plan and that no more players were going to be poached. And once sort of the months and years went by, or I should say months in this case, I think his evolution of thought, it just got to a place where he was like, I'm not sure about our viability from a financial and from a player standpoint. So I think Rory understands and appreciates that was then and this is now. And I'm sure we kind of have some sort of tea leaves here that maybe he saw some of this coming as well. So no, I'm actually not surprised Rory's defending Monahan. I don't think Monahan's in a very good position because I think people are going to point fingers and I get that. But again, we can't look at things like they're static. We have to look at things in terms of how they have evolved since those comments were made, since that fight was put up. And I think it's just a different story right now.
I love your perspective, Sia. That's why we have you on. That's fascinating to me. All right, RBC Canadian Open, what do you got?
Well, I mean, do you want to just do the first round leaders and call it a day? Okay, listen, I'll start with
let's do that.
I'll start with some head-to-heads. These are clearly like the bread and butter plays. So I have three head-to-heads I'll just go ahead and call out, and then I'll get to outrights and some first-round leaders. But I have Justin Rose minus 130 overs to hit the gala. I really like Justin Rose in this tournament in general. I love his consistency. I like the gala, too, in terms of his upside. But in a head-to-head, I'm going to lean on Rose's consistency. I love what he's doing on approach in particular and really has everything in terms of the strokes gain metrics. This is a new course, so I really want somebody that's going to be relatively consistent or that I think is going to be relatively consistent since there's a lot of unknowns. So I have Rose as an outright. Spoiler alert, you can see it on the chart here at plus 1,800. But I also like him against the gala. I have Michael Kim over Mackenzie Hughes. Speaking of consistency, Hughes can be that guy that has upside once every four or five tournaments, but he's been really inconsistent and he misses cuts a lot. I believe he's missed three out of his last four. Michael Kim is making cuts, but the cool thing about Michael Kim and the reason you might want to play him in DFS at 8,000 as well on DraftKings is because he's playing weekends really well. His finishing positions have been really good. Two top tens over his last handful of tournaments. Really like Michael Kim, minus 122 over Mackenzie Hughes. And then my final matchup is Lee Hodges over Harry Hall. Harry Hall has been doing a ton with the short game. I just don't think it's sustainable. Hodges has made three cuts in a row. He was T12 at the Memorial last week. Just really like how the game is trending. Sticky stats with his ball striking. Really like that. And then I'll just move to the outrights real quick. I like Rose. I like Shane Lowry. I like Michael Kim, as I just stated. And if you want to take some long shots, Ben Martin and Carson Young, speaking of long shots, great show yesterday, Kelly and company. But Ben Martin, Carson Young at 90-1. I like both of those in the long shot sprinkle category.
See how he threw in the long shots promo right in the middle there, Kelly?
Right. Thank you, see.
Long shots available. We're all podcast or distributed. All right, what about, ladies and gentlemen, Sia Najat is known for one thing and one thing above all. And he is sort of sheepish in being known for this. It's first round leaders. What do you have, man?
I have five, which is kind of a lot, and I'm going to throw in a sixth because as of yesterday, there are no rules. So I'm just going to kind of do my thing here. Justin Rose and Tommy Fleetwood at 35-1. Let's start there. I really like both of them. I think those two guys and like guys like Shane Lowry, I think this is going to feel like batting practice for them where they're just going to mosey on down the course. And at the end of the day, they're just going to be two shots up on everybody. So I like those guys from a first round leader standpoint. Eric Cole has been a first round flasher. I like him at plus 5,500. And his strokes gain metrics are very good. His weighted approach is very good. Wedge game, all of that. Ben Martin and Carson Young at 75-1. I just mentioned them as long-term outrights. They're probably better suited in the first round leader market because I don't see their viability over four rounds necessarily. And then the last one at 100-1, Patton Kizzire. He can bunch up birdies. And then the reality is this should be an easy scorable course. I think he has a shot to do it for 18 holes.
Wow. Off menu, Patton Kizzire, 100-1. Real quick, because we have 30 seconds. Do you have any U.S. Open outrights yet?
I don't actually.
Okay.
I'm one of those guys that just kind of waits for the Monday market to open and then I fire.
I got you. Sia, always appreciate the perspective, man. Thank you so much.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Sia Najat, everybody. Once again, a PGA and NFL analyst for Sportsline, co-host of the First Cut podcast at Sia Najat on Twitter. Kelly, that's why we have him on, because his perspective is not the common one. He's like, everybody calm down. It's actually not the most ridiculous thing. Is basically the nutshell of that. Will Hill, Wilson Hilson, with his basketball and baseball picks next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a smarter sports bettor with a VSiN Pro subscription for a limited time. Sign up for just $9.99 to get full access to everything we do, including daily pro picks on all the summer action, including NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our team of top handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access, and Kelly Pro Tools.
Yeah.
Like our exclusive betting splits showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Don't miss out on our lowest intro price of the year. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. We get tweets at Beatty the Book, a stream of Beatrice Haddad Maya quarter tweets. Hockey skeptic, I realize. She's probably done with the tournament for now that she's playing Iga, but what a match from the woman. Thanks for another winner. Again, I suggested her on the Beating the Book French Open preview pod at 8-1 to win her quarter. Michael Shepard, great call on Beatrice Haddad Maya to win Q2 Iga time. Daytime degenerate also showing his Beatrice Haddad Maya play, as did Doug Wedge. Doug Wedge got her at 12-1. Congratulations to everybody on all of that. And Drew Dinsick, he had Carolina Mukova, by the way. LV Liu also grabbed the Haddad Maya play, so congratulations, as did Iron Wing Cards. Let me get through the Haddad Mayas. I want to get to some of these others, pardon me. Martel, Gil, could we see a Tiger Tour with PGA defectors? He has the personal capital for initial funding, could easily bring in major sponsor money, and a TV deal. U.S.-based funds would likely jump at the investment opportunity. BlackRock could raise $1 billion by Friday. Let me just say this. I'm not making any predictions about anything when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, no, and I the only thing I can reply to that is what Sia Nija said. $600 billion. $600 billion is what we're talking about in that investment fund.
Jack Hannon. Jay Monahan is Tom from Succession. He said, Saudis to Jay, we need someone more despicable than Greg Norman. And Jay's response is, I can be that person. I can be that person. Elvis Toast
Patterson.
Elvis Toast Patterson fan. Gilly, I hate to say it on a sports betting show, but this golf thing with the PGA Tour and Liv is indeed 100% political. That's fact. Everybody's got an angle on this. Rick Mokry also on Haddad Maya at 12-1 and on with those. Thank you so much, everybody. I'm glad everybody cashed on that and hopefully on Carolina Mukova as well as the French Open continues. Let's talk to a gentleman who always has interesting things to say, no matter the sport he's betting on. It's Will Hill, VSiN's own Will Hill, VSiN contributor. You can follow him on Twitter at not the. That's with two E's. Will Hill, how you doing, William? Wilson?
Gilly, what's going on?
Man, I'm good, man. I'm good. Listen, I just, you and I were texting along with Felica yesterday about DeGrom. Let's talk about something that's non-betting related first, although if you have, I guess, Rangers futures, you might feel it is betting related. Jacob DeGrom undergoing Tommy John surgery. Probably should have done this a couple years ago, but is it your sense? I'm just speculating here. My thought is, because a lot of people are like, oh, he took the contract and it's, I'm going to guess he got medical advice. He found the doctor who said, maybe you'll be able to rehab this over time. And that just in the end, he wasn't. You buy that?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video, but he was in tears about it. Yeah. And like the sport's better when he's pitching. I mean, it's funny. He was so durable for a good, first 4 or 5 years of his career. And really since, I think he pitched that full 60-game season. Since then, I think it was right around the All-Star break of 2021 then. I mean, it's been on and off, more off than on. And it's tough. He signed a contract with the Mets, an extension like 4 or 5 years ago. It was a little under, where he was just in terms of his performance. And I think that stuck with him. I think it bothered him that the Mets offered Bauer more money than he was making. They offered Scherzer more money than he was making. And then you remember Scherzer got the ball in game one. So I think he was a little miffed at the Mets. And then he turns around, he gets the big money from Texas, and now we're looking at, 2 years with no DeGrom pitching, and he's going to be upper 30s when he gets back now.
If
he hasn't pitched,
if he never pitches again, is he in the Hall of Fame or not?
I would probably vote him yes. I don't think he will be. I would say no. I would vote him yes. I prefer dominance over longevity. I mean, some of these guys that hit 278 for 20 years, they get put in the Hall of Fame. You know, the Harold Baineses of the world. To me, I'd rather have a guy like Lincecum or Johan Santana or DeGrom, a guy that dominates for 3 or 4 years, just because it's so hard to be. To me, that's what the Hall of Fame is. It's the best player in your sport. Even if it's for a 2, 3, 4 year period, it's about being dominant. And to me, DeGrom was as dominant as they come. The wins, losses are never going to be there. He had so much bad luck pitching, so many no decisions where, he left the game up 1-0 or tied 1-1. But I don't think he would get in, no.
Yeah, I'm with you on the dominance. Listen, if Barry Lamar Bonds is not in the Hall of Fame, there shouldn't be a Hall of Fame at all. Let's just start there. See how I wedge that in. But if Tim Lincecum, for me as a Giants guy, the first name that came into my mind was Tim Lincecum. So DeGrom, lifetime 84-57 with 1,652 Ks. He's only really played 6 solid seasons. Obviously a better pitcher than Lincecum, but here's the deal with the counting stats, first of all. Lincecum has as many Cy Youngs, 2, as many All-Star appearances, 4, and oh, by the way, 3 World Series rings. And again, not that he isn't better than Lincecum, but I'm just talking about like what people look for in the Hall of Fame. And from a betting standpoint, nothing was better than betting on DeGrom when he came up in 2014 before people knew who he was. It was phenomenal for those of us who followed minor league baseball and just his numbers. And his numbers when he got to the pros. Lincecum had seasons of 265, 261, and 231 Ks. DeGrom, 239, 269, and 255, so comparable. Lincecum, 3 seasons leading the NL in Ks. DeGrom, twice. Lincecum pitched 2 no-hitters. DeGrom, 0. So, yeah, I don't know. If Lincecum's never sniffing it, I don't know. If he never pitched again, I don't know that he's in the Hall of Fame. I really don't. But anyway, that's a...
If he comes back, though, and he gives you 1.5, 2 really good years, maybe that's enough to push him over. These voters seem to prefer, the Jerome Bettises of the world, where you just average 4 yards a carry for 1 million years and you get put in the Hall of Fame. Again, I go the other way, where if you're great, even if it's for a short period of time, I prefer that. I think that's harder to do than be decent for a long time.
And I agree with you. If it's one or two more years, I think he's in for sure. But at this point, you're even though they're not counting stats, your dominance is great, but still too short of a span, I think. But you're right. I think a year or two more. What did you bet baseball-wise today?
Yankees team total under 4.5 at lineup without Judge is just not pretty. They were lucky to scratch out a run. It hit last night against Lucas Giolito. Now, Lynn has been bad for the White Sox, but to me, getting to 5 runs is going to be tough for this lineup, especially if you're at home and you're up 4-3. You don't get that ninth at bat. So you can talk me to the White Sox at plus money. Yankees team total under 4.5. That's the way I prefer. But to me, if you fade the Yankees without Judge, you're in good shape here. And they have odds to be the home run leader. I was looking at these. Otani's, I think, 16-1, and he's only 2 back. Devers is like 37-1. I haven't made a bet, but there's probably a bet in there with Judge, who he's going on the IL. I heard him talk yesterday. He's not sure if the toe is broken, which I don't know how you're not sure. So if Judge is out an extended period of time, even just the 10 days, that's going to bring a lot of people back to the pack right up, you know, where Judge is. So I do think there's probably a bet in there. I'll probably look more into that today, but I am fading the Yankees today. I also took the Pirates. That number's gotten away from me a little bit. I think you can still find $1.80, but I will take them at home against the A's, just pretty much betting against the A's no matter what, although that was a disappointing result yesterday as the A's won 11-2. I'm also betting Miami. I bet the Marlins on the money line. I'm also going to bet them. Sometimes when these teams are laying like $1.80 and they're home and I really like the pitching advantage, I'll just bet them to score the first run. I think it's right around even money. To me, Edwin Cabrera, if he could ever straighten out his walks issue, he has lights out like Cy Young stuff with his swing and miss stuff. He's got a little Nuke LaLoosh in him. He's so wild, but he's so dominant when he can get the ball over the plate. But I do like the Marlins here. And I laid some big prices on the Marlins to miss the playoffs. I am starting to get a little nervous because they just seem to squeak out these wins day after day after day.
I mean, it starts with the one-run wins, and then it just goes from there, right? It just snowballs from there. And then you have, oh, by the way, Luis Arraez hitting .401. Like, I just want – I know you're a baseball guy, too. I miss summers of individual players doing amazing things. And I know he's not the sexiest, right? He's not hitting the ball out of the park. He's slapping them just past the infield. But, man, I would love to see this go deep into the summer.
Yeah, like back in our day when all the games weren't on TV, they would cut into the at-bats, and it was a special thing. You get to watch the at-bats, whether it was McGuire or somebody chasing 400. Yeah, it is fun. I hope it catches on a little more and it becomes a story. It's a lot of fun.
Anything in NBA Finals Game 3 from you tonight?
I played the under. I do think there's probably a little correlation, too. If you like Denver, go over. If you like Miami, go under. I think Miami has a clear game plan here. It is slow the game down, keep it close, and just steal it at the end. I think they are limiting possessions. I don't think this is an accident that game two is played at a slow pace. So I think the under is a good bet. I bet Murray 8-1 to lead the series in assists, too. He has a 2-assist lead. Jokic was the big favorite coming into the series. And if this make Jokic a scorer thing is going to be real, and I guess why not? It worked pretty much in game two. Murray's already up by 2 assists over Jokic. To me, at 8-1, that's a good price. So Murray 8-1 to lead the finals in assists. And look, I think Denver's better, but I just have no appetite to bet against Miami anymore. I'm done. I don't care. Denver could win the next two games by 50 points each. If it's a pick 'em in game five, I'm still not betting on Denver. I'm so sick of losing money on the Heat. I hate betting against them. I hate their uniforms. I hate their stupid faces. I'm done betting against the Heat. Kelly, back me up here.
I'm just going to clap back here. Bravo, stupid.
I was going to say, wait in line behind Kelly, but stupid faces. You go to the front of the line.
Let's hang out and cry together.
That's phenomenal. Oh, man, they are doing it to breaking brains. That's what the Miami Heat do.
I could see them winning tonight, being up 2-1 and setting up pretty much a winner-take-all, like the winner of Game 4 wins the series. I would not be surprised. Shocked Denver blew that game the other night.
Wow. When they went up 15, I kind of like sort of tuned out a little bit, right? And you're like, wait, what's happening on this? Will, always the best. Plug away, sir.
Twitch.tv/GoBoysNetwork. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Will Hill, everybody. At not the Will Hill. VEASAN Zone.
Stupid faces.
I hate
stupid
their
uniforms.
Stupid faces.
I actually like their uniforms.
I love their uniforms. Coming back, Jason Weingarten. So many baseball questions and bets next.
Enough.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Use the BetMGM bonus bet to place your next wager on any game in any sport. To receive your bonus bet, simply log into your BetMGM account every Saturday and Wednesday between May 13th through June 21st to bet on any game of your choice. Then add any type of bet on any game to your bet slip and activate your bonus bet. There's no deposit or additional wager required. This bonus bet is on the house. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Promotion may differ per customer, 21 and over to wager. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Promotional offer not available in Nevada, New York, Ontario, and Washington, D.C. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming as well. Call 877-8-HOPENY. That's Hope, New York. Or text HOPENY, that's 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Kansas and Nevada, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Skill Alexander, it is Kelly Bidlin on this Wednesday, Game 3 of the NBA Finals. By the way, I love that our analysis in the NBA Finals has now been reduced to, I hate their stupid faces. From our esteemed guests. That's awesome. We're all punch drunk in this NBA Finals. Oh, man. We will get into more NBA Finals talk a little later on the show with Nick Whalen from RotoWire. We get tweets at Beanie the Book. Always love them. This is from New York. Yeah, thank you to everybody for all the feedback. A bunch of Beatrice Haddad Maya winners, Alpheus Berner III as well. You are welcome, sir. New Jersey, New York says regarding the Marlins. We were talking with Will about the Marlins. That schedule from today until the All-Star break, they could very well play themselves into being buyers at the deadline unless they do what Seattle did in 2021 and Baltimore did last season and just punt nonetheless. To talk all things baseball, and there's a bunch of baseball to talk, we bring in our buddy Jason Weingarten from under a cloud of smoke in Southern California at Spreadopedia on Twitter. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. Busy Tuesday yesterday. Absolutely. I was not expecting such a busy day when I woke up.
Yeah, it was Ellie De La Cruz Day. I want to get to that momentarily, but first, just in your honor, we have screens on, and in the screen right in front of me, we're showing Golf Channel, and it's Rose Zhang in the playoff from Sunday. So congratulations to you. Everybody's thanking you for giving out Rose Zhang to win her inaugural, her debut LPGA event. Nice job, man.
Thank you. It was a nice spot. You know, it's sort of like Rookie of the Year when you track the younger players, same as in golf, like they burst out on the scene. You have a small window to kind of exploit it until they become super popular. And it was really just 1 week maybe here. But I knew I had to take the shot, and it worked out this time.
Yeah, I was just talking about DeGrom in 884 in 2014. That's what he was like. Every start out there, you're never getting those prices again. So you have to be able to catch these moments in time. Rose Zhang beating Jennifer Kupcho in a playoff at the Mizuho America's Open, and Jason hitting that bet big time for everybody who followed suit. So let's get to baseball. You and I were texting back and forth yesterday because it was an amazing day, right? Luis Arraez of the Marlins goes 2-for-4 and actually gets to 401. For the Marlins, which is about the seventh deepest time into a season since Ted Williams hit 406 in 1941. It's the seventh deepest run into a season where someone is hitting above 400. And then there is the notion of Ellie De La Cruz, which, as you pointed out, is translating to my God to the cross. I have bets, so I had the 30-1 on De La Cruz. I know you have De La Cruz bets as well to win NL Rookie of the Year. Yesterday after on the show saying, you know, I don't really think the Arraez bet is a solid one. I got a little FOMO, and I bet Arraez to win MVP at 80-1 yesterday just because I didn't want to be left out on this. I expect De La Cruz to get there. I don't expect Arraez to get there. Is that kind of how you feel?
Well, I was thinking about Arraez today. How many players would you put ahead of him on the MVP list in the NL?
At least five or six. Assume, yeah.
Five or six?
I would.
I got like three.
Okay, who are your three?
Freeman, Acuna, and I got to pull up whoever the third guy was. But who are you? Have more than that?
Well, Pete Alonso, Mookie Betts. I think all
That's
four
the
of
thing.
Those guys.
I don't think he gets more. I don't think Pete Alonso gets more votes than him for what? Being on a 30-31 team and hitting a lot of home runs, like big deal.
Well, here's the
Juan
bet.
Juan Soto's the only other guy on that list I see as any value. His numbers are monstrous as usual, and he's just getting no respect. But Alonso,
But I think, I don't even think that's the discussion, though. I think you and I would agree that the bet is simply, because Luis Arraez is not going to get the MVP if he hits 372 on a Marlins team that makes the playoffs. He's just not.
No, definitely not.
The whole bet is, if he can do the unthinkable or flirt so long with the unthinkable that it becomes this massive story down the stretch of the season, then it does become this fascinating bet where it's like, this hasn't happened since way back when. You can't ignore that.
Well, the question is, if the Marlins win the division, you know, assuming Acuña is not injured and still the front runner, does Ronald Acuña win MVP on a non-division winning Braves team if the Marlins win the NL East? I'm not sure about that. But then comes the 400, and you know, I sort of gave you the Tony Gwynn comparison yesterday. This is a 15-time All-Star, zero-time MVP, but you know, a division win by the Marlins, as improbable as that sounds, could push them. You know, I mean, gotta respect batting 400. Baseball's not all about just hitting home runs. We tend to, like you mentioned, Pete Alonso, we kind of just look at hitting home runs and being like, oh, well, he's the MVP. Like, I get it, but you know, well, Luis Arraez, nice player.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I said it again. In 2012, you had to give the MVP to Miggy Cabrera because a triple crown hadn't been accomplished in 45 years. You can't talk about these hallowed things in baseball for decades, and then when they actually happen, ignore them, become normalized to them. Like, I don't know, I like Trout's metrics better. If it's 400, yeah, if he hits 400, he's winning. You know, long way from hitting 400. Yeah,
it would be very hard to deny him, and he has a legitimate shot. I mean, it's still a very uphill climb, a lot of season left, but it's not out of the question.
What'd you bet in baseball today?
I had a couple bets. I'm on the D-backs today. They're only 120 versus Patrick Corbin in the Nationals. I keep looking at that and thinking, what am I missing? What am I missing here? Am I missing something?
I don't think so.
Because I'm just going to lay 120, 122 with the D-backs. That's a fine number, too. The Reds, back on the Reds. I bet them yesterday. Could bet them again today. I think Noah Syndergaard is on his last legs. And, you know, it's kind of like the opposite of the DeGrom situation you mentioned. If you get a chance to fade Syndergaard at minus 151 right now on the road in a very offensive, favorable ballpark, just take it. And my other game, I'm looking. Oh, the Rangers. What, we have not talked about the Rangers very much, but how about them Rangers, Gil?
Well, my only season win totals bet this year, pre-flop, was the Rangers over. And I do
and
that.
And you're probably going to get there, aren't they? Something like 40-20.
They are 40-20.
Best start in franchise history. The last top teams that have the numbers they have all won the pennant or made the World Series. Like, you know. And it's time to start paying attention to them, I guess. I thought they probably had another year of development before they were serious, but
they are
on their way.
Eovaldi filled the DeGrom role, basically, right?
It all just kind of goes back to the whole, you know, signing free agents, big contracts almost never works out it doesn't work out nearly as often as we think it does. But DeGrom, kind of a bummer, but they're this good without him, so they don't really need them, maybe.
So deep, and the wins are banked, right? The wins are banked, as we like to say. They're 40-20, and so they could play sub 500 ball, and that season win total will still get over at this point. So it's the D-backs, and what was your other play? Dodgers Reds game? What was the Dodgers Reds play?
Reds.
Okay.
Against Syndergaard and Rangers. I think
Rangers. Okay.
I think we're getting to the point where like the Rangers are becoming the Rays at the beginning of the season, where the prices are kind of not necessarily gonna be value every day, but I still see a tiny bit of value against Jack Flaherty, who's not been the same this year.
Yeah, and if people were wondering, you know, about my Rangers play, that was in the VSiN, you know, Pro Baseball Betting Guide before the season, and it's what I do every year in terms of base runs and PyFag from the previous season. There's a whole method to why I came up with that, and they have done it in spades so far. The other side of this, before you go, I wanna just get your thoughts on this because we haven't talked about this enough either. The Padres are just so bad. What is your story with them? Like, how do you see that?
Well, Machado's been hurt. Tatis is coming off, you know, multiple wrist, shoulder injury, that steroid suspension. He's still playing fine, but, you know, all those things going against him. Soto's still been a monster. And Xander Bogaerts has some reoccurring wrist injury that apparently they knew about before they signed him and still signed him. And it's something that he needs a DL stint, at least possibly off-season surgery. He keeps trying to play through it. So it's actually, I've been trying to fade his props every day. Cause I know he's playing through an injury, but I just think it's a team that went out and spent a bunch of money on free agents and thought they'd just, you know, fill all their holes that way. And it's not working. That's what happens in baseball sometimes.
That's what happens in baseball. There's a spectrum where everything breaks your way, where everything goes against you. And then there's a whole, you know, range in between. It is not working out, at least thus far. Not even halfway through the season. Things could change. Jason, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Talk to you later.
Jason Weingarten, author of the Rose Zhang bet from this past weekend. Mike Pritchard on the NFL next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.